Selected poems, Robert Frost. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Selected Poems. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook title. Selected Poems, author Robert Frost, release date June 27, 2019, ebook 59824. Language English, other information and formats www.gutenberg.org/ebook/59824. Credits produced by Laura Nadal Rodriguez at Free Literature Images, generously made available by Hathi Trust. Asterisk start of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK SELECTD POEMS asterisk. Selected Poems by Robert Frost, New York, Henry Holt and Company, 1923, to Helen Thomas. In memory OF Edward Thomas. Publisher's note: the poems included in this volume are reprinted from Mountain Interval, North of Boston, and A Boy's Will. Contents: I, the Pasture, the Cow in Apple Time, The Runaway, Roman II, An Old Man's Winter Night, Home Burial, The Death of the Hired Man, A Servant to Servants, The Self-Seeker, The Hill Wife. Out, Out, Roman III, Putting in the Seed, Going for Water, Mowing, Roman IV, After Apple, P-I-C-K-I-N-G, Birches, The Gum Gatherer, The Mountain, The Tuft of Flowers, Mending Wall, and Encounter, The Woodpile, V, Snow, In the Home Stretch, V-I, The Road Not Taken, The Oven Bird. A Vantage Point, The Sound of Trees, Hyla Brook, My November Guest, Range Finding, October to the Thawing Wind, Roman 7, A Time to Talk, The Code, A Hundred Collars, Blueberries, Brown's Descent, O.R., The Willy-Nilly Slide, Roman 8, Revelation, Storm Fear, Bond and Free, Flower Gathering, Reluctance, Into My Own Eye, The Pasture, I'm Going Out to Clean the Pasture, Spring, I'll Only Stop to Rake the Leaves Away, and Wait to Watch the Water Clear, I May, I Shan't Be Gone Long, You Come Too. I'm Going Out to Fetch the Little Calf, that's standing by the mother. It's so young, it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come too, the cow in apple time. Something inspires the only cow of late to make no more of a wall than an open gate and think no more of wall builders than fools. Her face is flecked with pumice and she drools, a cider syrup. Having tasted fruit, she scorns a pasture withering to the root. She runs from tree to tree where lie and sweet. The wind falls spiked with stubble and wormeat. She leaves them bitten when she has to fly. She bellows on a knoll against the sky. Her udder shrivels and the milk goes dry. The runaway, once when the snow of the year was beginning to fall, we stopped by a mountain pasture to say, whose colt? A little Morgan had one forefoot on the wall, the other curled at his breast. He dipped his head and snorted at us. And then he had to bolt. We heard the miniature thunder where he fled. And we saw him, or thought we saw him, dim and gray, like a shadow against the curtain of falling flakes. I think the little fellow's afraid of the snow. He isn't winter broken. It isn't play with the little fellow at all. He's running away. I doubt if even his mother could tell him. Sakes, it's only weather. He'd think she didn't know. Where is his mother? He can't be out alone. And now he comes again with a clatter of stone and mounts the wall again with whited eyes and all his tail that isn't hair up straight. He shudders his coat as if to throw off flies. Whoever it is that leaves him out so late, when other creatures have gone to stall and bin, ought to be told to come and take him in. Roman II, An Old Man's Winter Night, all out of doors looked darkly in at him, through the thin frost, almost in separate stars, that gathers on the pane in empty rooms. What kept his eyes from giving back the gaze was the lamp tilted near them in his hand. What kept him from remembering what it was that brought him to that creaking room was age. He stood with barrels round him at a loss, and having scared the cellar under him. In clomping there, he scared it once again, in clomping off, and scared the outer night, which has its sounds familiar like the roar of trees and crack of branches, common things, but nothing so like beating on a box. A light he was to know one but himself, where now he sat, concerned with he knew what, a quiet light, and then not even that. He consigned to the moon, such as she was, so late arising to the broken moon as better than the sun in any case. For such a charge, his snow upon the roof, his icicles along the wall to keep and slept. The log that shifted with a jolt, once in the stove, disturbed him and he shifted and eased his heavy breathing but still slept. One aged man, one man, can't keep a house, a farm, a countryside, or if he can, it's thus he does it of a winter night, home burial. He saw her from the bottom of the stairs. Before she saw him, she was starting down, looking back over her shoulder at some fear. She took a doubtful step and then undid it to raise herself and look again. He spoke, advancing toward her. "What is it you see from up there always, for I want to know?" She turned and sank upon her skirts at that, and her face changed from terrified to dull. He said to gain time, "What is it you see?" mounting until she cowered under him. "I will find out now, you must tell me, dear." She in her place refused him any help, with the least stiffening of her neck and silence. She let him look, sure that he wouldn't see, blind creature, and a while he didn't see. But at last he murmured, "Oh," and again, "Oh." "What is it, what?" she said, "just that I see." "You don't," she challenged. "Tell me what it is." "The wonder is I didn't see at once. I never noticed it from here before. I must be wanted to it, that's the reason, the little graveyard where my people are. So small the window frames the whole of it. Not so much larger than a bedroom, is it? There are 3 stones of slate and 1 of marble, broad-shouldered little slabs there in the sunlight, on the side hill. We haven't to mind those, but I understand, it is not the stones, but the child's mound." Don't, she cried. She withdrew shrinking from beneath his arm. That rested on the banister and slid downstairs and turned on him with such a daunting look. He said twice over before he knew himself, "Can a man speak of his own child he's lost? Not you. Oh, where's my hat? Oh, I don't need it. I must get out of here. I must get air. I don't know rightly whether any man can. Amy, don't go to someone else this time. Listen to me. I won't come down the stairs." He sat and fixed his chin between his fists. "There's something I should like to ask you, dear. You don't know how to ask it. Help me, then." Her fingers moved the latch for all reply. "My words are nearly always an offense. I don't know how to speak of anything so as to please you. But I might be taught, I should suppose. I can't say I see how. A man must partly give up being a man with women folk. We could have some arrangement by which I'd bind myself to keep hands off anything special you're a mind to name, though I don't like such things twixt those that love. 2 that don't love can't live together without them, but 2 that do can't live together with them." She moved the latch a little. Don't go, don't carry it to someone else this time. Tell me about it if it's something human. Let me into your grief. I'm not so much, unlike other folks as you're standing there, a part would make me out. Give me my chance. I do think, though, you overdo it a little. What was it brought you up to think at the thing? To take your mother loss of a first child, so inconsolably in the face of love, you'd think his memory might be satisfied. There you go sneering now. I'm not, you make me angry. I'll come down to you, God, what a woman. And it's come to this, a man can't speak of his own child that's dead. You can't because you don't know how. If you had any feelings, you that dug with your own hand, how could you? His little, grave, I saw you from that very window there, making the gravel leap and leap in air. Leap up like that, and land so lightly, and roll back down the mound beside the hole. I thought, who is that man? I didn't know you, and I crept down the stairs and up the stairs to look again, and still your spade kept lifting. Then you came in. I heard your rumbling voice, out in the kitchen, and I don't know why, but I went near to see with my own eyes. You could sit there with the stains on your shoes, of the fresh earth from your own baby's grave, and talk about your everyday concerns. You had stood the spade up against the wall, outside there in the entry, for I saw it. I shall laugh the worst laugh I ever laughed, cursed. God, if I don't believe I'm cursed. I can repeat the very words you were saying. 3 foggy mornings and 1 rainy day will rot the best birch fence a man can build. Think of it, talk like that at such a time, what at how long it takes a birch to rot, to do with what was in the darkened parlor, you couldn't care, the nearest friends can go. With anyone to death comes so far short, they might as well not try to go at all. No, from the time when one is sick to death, one is alone and he dies more alone. Friends make pretense of following to the grave, but before one is in it, their minds are turned, and making the best of their way back to life and living people and things they understand, but the world's evil. I won't have grief so if I can change it. Oh, I won't. There, you have said it all and you feel better. You won't go now. You're crying, close the door, the heart's gone out of it. Why keep it up, Amy? There's someone coming down the road. You, oh, you think the talk is all, I must go, somewhere out of this house. How can I make you? If you do, she was opening the door wider. Where do you mean to go? First tell me that, I'll follow and bring you back by force. I will. The death of the hired man, Mary sat musing on the lamp flame at the table, waiting for Warren, when she heard his step. She ran on tiptoe down the darkened passage to meet him in the doorway with the news and put him on his guard. Selah's is back. She pushed him outward with her through the door and shut it after her. Be kind, she said. She took the market things from Warren's arms and set them on the porch, then drew him down to sit beside her on the wooden steps. When was I ever anything but kind to him? But I'll not have the fellow back, he said. I told him so last haying, didn't I? He left then, I said, that ended it. What good is he? Who else will harbor him, at his age, for the little he can do? What help he is there's no depending on, off he goes always when I need him most. He thinks he ought to earn a little pay, enough at least to buy tobacco with, so he won't have to beg and be beholden. All right, I say, I can't afford to pay any fixed wages, though I wish I could. Someone else can. Then someone else will have, too. I shouldn't mind his bettering himself. If that was what it was, you can be certain, when he begins like that, there's someone at him, trying to coax him off with pocket money. In haying time, when any help is scarce, in winter he comes back to us, I'm done. SH, not so loud, he'll hear you, Mary said. I want him to, he'll have to soon or late. He's worn out. He's asleep beside the stove. When I came up from Rose, I found him here, huddled against the barn door fast asleep. A miserable sight and frightening too. You needn't smile, I didn't recognize him. I wasn't looking for him and he's changed, wait till you see. Where did you say he'd been? He didn't say. I dragged him to the house and gave him tea and tried to make him smoke. I tried to make him talk about his travels. Nothing would do, he just kept nodding off. What did he say? Did he say anything? But little. Anything, Mary, confess. He said he'd come to ditch the meadow for me. Warren, but did he? I just want to know. Of course he did. What would you have him say? Surely you wouldn't grudge the poor old man some humble way to save his self-respect. He added, if you really care to know, he meant to clear the upper pasture, too. That sounds like something you have heard before. Warren, I wish you could have heard the way. He jumbled everything. I stopped to look two or three times. He made me feel so queer, to see if he was talking in his sleep. He ran on Harold Wilson, you remember. The boy you had in haying 4 years since. He's finished school and teaching in his college. Silas declares you'll have to get him back. He says they too will make a team for work. Between them, they will lay this farm as smooth, the way he mixed that in with other things. He thinks young Wilson a likely lad, though daft, on education. You know how they fought, all through July under the blazing sun. Silas up on the cart to build the load. Harold along beside to pitch it on. Yes, I took care to keep well out of earshot. Well, those days trouble Silas like a dream, you wouldn't think they would. How some things linger, Harold's young college boy's assurance piqued him. After so many years, he still keeps finding good arguments he sees he might have used. I sympathize. I know just how it feels to think of the right thing to say too late. Harold's associated in his mind with Latin. He asked me what I thought of Harold saying. He studied Latin like the violin. Because he liked it, that an argument he said he couldn't make the boy believe, he could find water with a hazel prong. Which showed how much good school had ever done. Him, he wanted to go over that. But most of all, he thinks if he could have another chance, to teach him how to build a load of hay. I know, that's Sela's one accomplishment. He bundles every forkful in its place, and tags and numbers it for future reference, so he can find and easily dislodge it in the unloading. Sela's does that well. He takes it out in bunches like big birds' nests. You never see him standing on the hay he's trying to lift, straining to lift himself. He thinks if he could teach him that, he'd be some good perhaps to someone in the world. He hates to see a boy the fool of books, poor Silas, so concerned for other folk, and nothing to look backward to with pride, and nothing to look forward to with hope, so now and never any different. Part of a moon was falling down the west, dragging the whole sky with it to the hills, its light poured softly in her lap. She saw and spread her apron to it. She put out her hand among the harp-like morning glory strings, taut with the dew from garden bed to eaves, as if she played unheard the tenderness that wrought on him beside her in the night. Warren, she said, he has come home to die. You needn't be afraid he'll leave you this time. Home, he mocked gently. Yes, what else but home? It all depends on what you mean by home. Of course he's nothing to us any more than was the hound that came a stranger to us, out of the woods, worn out upon the trail. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you somehow haven't to deserve. Warren leaned out and took a step or two, picked up a little stick and brought it back, and broke it in his hand and tossed it by. Silas has better claim on us, you think, than on his brother, 13 little miles. As the road winds would bring him to his door, Silas has walked that far no doubt today, why didn't he go there? His brother's rich, somebody director in the bank. He never told us that. We know it, though. I think his brother ought to help, of course. I'll see to that if there is need. He ought of right to take him in and might be willing to, he may be better than appearances, but have some pity on Silas. Do you think, if he did any pride in claiming kin, or anything he looked for from his brother, he'd keep so still about him all this time? I wonder what's between them. I can tell you, Silas is what he is, we wouldn't mind him. But just the kind that kinsfolk can't abide, he never did a thing so very bad, he don't know why he isn't quite as good as anyone, he won't be made ashamed, to please his brother, worthless though he is. I can't think he ever hurt anyone. No, but he hurt my heart the way he lay and rolled his old head on that sharp-edged chair back. He wouldn't let me put him on the lounge. You must go in and see what you can do. I made the bed up for him there tonight. You'll be surprised at him, how much he's broken. His working days are done, I'm sure of it. I'd not be in a hurry to say that. I haven't been. Go look, see for yourself. But Warren, please remember how it is. He's come to help you ditch the meadow. He has a plan. You mustn't laugh at him. He may not speak of it, and then he may. I'll sit and see if that small sailing cloud will hit or miss the moon. It hit the moon, then there were three there making a dim row. The moon, the little silver cloud, and she. Warren returned too soon, it seemed to her, slipped to her side, caught up her hand and waited. Warren, she questioned. Dead, was all he answered. A servant to servants. I didn't make you know how glad I was to have you come and camp here on our land. I promised myself to get down some day and see the way you lived, but I don't know, with a house full of hungry men to feed. I guess you'd find. It seems to me, I can't express my feelings any more than I can raise my voice or want to lift. My hand, oh, I can lift it when I have to. Did ever you feel so? I hope you never. It's got so I don't even know for sure whether I am glad, sorry, or anything. There's nothing but a voice-like left inside. That seems to tell me how I ought to feel, and would feel if I wasn't all gone wrong. You take the lake. I look and look at it. I see it's a fair, pretty sheet of water. I stand and make myself repeat out loud. The advantages it has, so long and narrow, like a deep piece of some old running river, cut short off at both ends. It lies 5 miles, straight away through the mountain notch, from the sink window where I wash the plates, and all our storms come up toward the house, drawing the slow waves whiter and whiter and whiter. It took my mind off donuts and soda biscuit, to step outdoors and take the water dazzle, a sunny morning, or take the rising wind. About my face and body and through my wrapper, when a storm threatened from the dragon's den, and a cold chill shivered across the lake. I see it's a fair, pretty sheet of water, our Willoughby. How did you hear of it, I expect, though everyone's heard of it, in a book about ferns? Listen to that, you let things more like feathers regulate, you're going and coming. And you like it here, I can see how you might. But I don't know, it would be different if more people came, for then there would be business. As it is. The cottages Len built, sometimes we rent them, sometimes we don't. We've a good piece of shore, that ought to be worth something and may yet, but I don't count on it as much as Len. He looks on the bright side of everything, including me. He thinks I'll be all right with doctoring, but it's not medicine. Low is the only doctors dared to say so. It's rest I want. There, I have set it out. From cooking meals for hungry hired men and washing dishes after them from doing. Things over and over that just won't stay done. By good rights, I ought not to have so much put on me, but there seems no other way. Len says one steady pull more ought to do it. He says the best way out is always through, and I agree to that, or in so far as that I can see no way out but through. Least ways for me, and then they'll be convinced. It's not that Len don't want the best for me. It was his plan our moving over in, beside the lake from where that day I showed you. We used to live 10 miles from anywhere. We didn't change without some sacrifice, but Len went at it to make up the loss. His work's a man's, of course, from sun to sun, but he works when he works as hard as I do, though there's small profit in comparisons. Women and men will make them all the same. But work ain't all. Len undertakes too much. He's into everything in town. This year, it's highways and he's got too many men around him to look after that make waste. They take advantage of him shamefully, and proud too of themselves for doing so. We have 4 here to board great good-for-nothings, sprawling about the kitchen with their talk while I fry their bacon. Much they care, no more put out in what they do or say than if I wasn't in the room at all. Coming and going all the time they are, I don't learn what their names are, let alone their characters or whether they are safe, to have inside the house with doors unlocked. Not afraid of them, though, if they're not afraid of me. There's 2 can play at that. I have my fancies. It runs in the family. My father's brother wasn't right. They kept him locked up for years back there at the old farm. Been away once. Yes, I've been away, the state asylum. I was prejudiced. I wouldn't have sent anyone of mine there. You know, the old idea, the only asylum, was the poorhouse and those who could afford, rather than send their folks to such a place, kept them at home, and it does seem more human. But it's not so. The place is the asylum. There they have every means proper to do with, and you aren't darkening other people's lives. Worse than no good to them, and they no good. To you in your condition, you can't know, affection or the want of it in that state. I've heard too much of the old-fashioned way. My father's brother, he went mad quite young. Some thought he had been bitten by a dog, because his violence took on the form of carrying his pillow in his teeth, but it's more likely he was crossed in love, or so the story goes. It was some girl. Anyway, all he talked about was love. they soon saw he would do someone a mischief if he weren't kept strict watch of, and it ended in father's building him a sort of cage or room within a room of hickory poles, like stanchions in the barn from floor to ceiling. A narrow passage all the way around, anything they put in for furniture, he'd tear to pieces, even a bed to lie on, so they made the place comfortable with straw, like a beast's stall, to ease their consciences. Of course they had to feed him without dishes. They tried to keep him clothed, but he paraded, with his clothes on his arm, all of his clothes, cruel it sounds. I suppose they did the best, they knew. And just when he was at the height, father and mother married and mother came, a bride to help take care of such a creature, and accommodate her young life to his. That was what marrying father meant to her. She had to lie and hear love things made dreadful by his shouts in the night. He'd shout and shout, until the strength was shouted out of him. And his voice died down slowly from exhaustion. He'd pull his bars apart like bow and bowstring, and let them go and make them twang until his hands had worn them smooth as any oxbow. And then he'd crow as if he thought that child's play the only fun he had. I've heard them say, though, they found a way to put a stop to it. He was before my time. I never saw him. But the pen stayed exactly as it was, there in the upper chamber in the L, a sort of catch-all full of attic clutter. I often think of the smooth hickory bars. It got so I would say, you know, half-fooling. It's time I took my turn upstairs in jail. Just as you will till it becomes a habit. No wonder I was glad to get away. Mind you, I waited till Len said the word. I didn't want the blame if things went wrong. I was glad, though, no end when we moved out, and I looked to be happy, and I was. As I said, for a while, but I don't know, somehow the change wore out like a prescription, and there's more to it than just window views and living by a lake. I'm past such help. Unless Len took the notion, which he won't, and I won't ask him, it's not sure enough. I suppose I've got to go the road I'm going, other folks have to, and why shouldn't I? I almost think if I could do like you, drop everything and live out on the ground. But it might be, come night, I shouldn't like it, or a long rain. I should soon get enough and be glad of a good roof overhead. I've lain awake thinking of you, I'll warrant, more than you have yourself some of these nights. The wonder was the tents weren't snatched away from over you as you lay in your beds. I haven't courage for a risk like that. Bless you, of course, you're keeping me from work, but the thing of it is I need to be kept. There's work enough to do, there's always that, but behind's behind. The worst that you can do is set me back a little more behind. I shan't catch up in this world anyway. I'd rather you not go unless you must, the self-seeker. Willis, I didn't want you here today. The lawyer's coming for the company. I'm going to sell my soul, or rather, feet. $500 for the pair, you know. With you, the feet have nearly been the soul, and if you're going to sell them to the devil, I want to see you do it. When's he coming? I half suspect you knew and came on purpose, to try to help me drive a better bargain. Well, if it's true. Yours are no common feet. The lawyer don't know what it is he's buying. So many miles you might have walked, you won't walk. You haven't run your 40 orchids down. What does he think? How are the blessed feet? The doctor's sure you're going to walk again? He thinks I'll hobble. It's both legs and feet. They must be terrible, I mean, to look at. I haven't dared to look at them uncovered. Through the bed blankets, I remind myself of a starfish laid out with rigid points. The wonder is it hadn't been your head. It's hard to tell you how I managed it. When I saw the shaft had me by the coat, I didn't try too long to pull away or fumble for my knife to cut away. I just embraced the shaft and rode it out, till Weiss shut off the water in the wheel pit. That's how I think I didn't lose my head, but my legs got their knocks against the ceiling. Awful. Why didn't they throw off the belt, instead of going clear down in the wheel pit? They say some time was wasted on the belt. Old Streak of Leather doesn't love me much, because I made him spit fire at my knuckles, the way Ben Franklin used to make the kite string. That must be it. Some days he won't stay on. That day a woman couldn't coax him off. He's on his rounds now with his tail in his mouth. Snatched right and left across the silver pulleys. Everything goes the same without me there. You can hear the small buzz saws whine, the big saw, caterwaul to the hills around the village. As they both bite the wood, it's all our music, one ought as a good villager to like it. No doubt it has a sort of prosperous sound, and it's our life. Yes, when it's not our death. You make that sound as if it wasn't so, with everything. What we live by, we die by. I wonder where my lawyer is. His train's in, I want this over with, I'm hot and tired. You're getting ready to do something foolish. Watch for him, will? You let him in. I'd rather Mrs. Corbin didn't know. I've boarded here so long, she thinks she owns me. You're bad enough to manage without her. And I'm going to be worse instead of better. You've got to tell me how far this has gone. Have you agreed to any price? 500, 500, 5, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you needn't look at me. I don't believe you. I told you, Willis, when you first came in, don't you be hard on me. I have to take what I can get. You see, they have the feet. which gives them the advantage in the trade. I can't get back the feet in any case. But your flowers, man, you're selling out your flowers. Yes, that's one way to put it, all the flowers, of every kind everywhere in this region, for the next 40 summers, call it 40. But I'm not selling those, I'm giving them. They never earn me so much as 1 cent, money can't pay me for the loss of them. No, the 500 was the sum they named, to pay the doctor's bill and tide me over. It's that or fight, and I don't want to fight. I just want to get settled in my life, such as it's going to be, and know the worst, or best, it may not be so bad. The firm, promise me all the shooks I want to nail. But what about your Flora of the Valley? You have me there. But that you didn't think, that was worth money to me? Still, I own, it goes against me not to finish it, for the friends it might bring me. By the way, I had a letter from Burroughs, did I tell you? About my Cypripedium regino. He says it's not reported so far north. There, there's the bell, he's rung. But you go down and bring him up and don't let Mrs. Corbin. Oh well, we'll soon be through with it, I'm tired. Willis brought up besides the Boston lawyer, a little barefoot girl who in the noise of heavy footsteps in the old frame house and baritone importance of the lawyer, stood for a while unnoticed with her hands shyly behind her. Well, and how is Mr.? The lawyer was already in his satchel. As if for papers that might bear the name, he hadn't at command. You must excuse me, I dropped in at the mill and was detained. Looking round, I suppose, said Willis. Yes, well, yes. Here, anything that might prove useful? The broken one saw Anne. Why, here is Anne, what do you want, dear? Come stand by the bed, tell me what is it? Anne just wagged her dress with both hands held behind her. Guess, she said. Oh, guess which hand? My, once on a time, I knew a lovely way to tell for cert. By looking in the ears, but I forget it. Let me see. I think I'll take the right, that's sure to be right even if it's wrong. Come, hold it out, don't change. A ram's horn orchid, a ram's horn, what would I have got, I wonder, if I had chosen left? Hold out the left, another ram's horn. Where did you find those, under what beech tree, on what woodchuck's knoll? Anne looked at the large lawyer at her side, and thought she wouldn't venture on so much. Were there no others? There were four or five. I knew you wouldn't let me pick them all. I wouldn't, so I wouldn't. You're the girl, you see, Anne has her lesson learned by heart. I wanted there should be some there next year. Of course you did. You left the rest for seed, and for the backwoods woodchuck. You're the girl, a ram's horn orchid seed pod for a woodchuck, sounds something like. Better than farmer's beans, to a discriminating appetite, though the ram's horn is seldom to be had. In bushel lots, doesn't come on the market. But Anne, I'm troubled, have you told me all, you're hiding something? That's as bad as lying, you ask this lawyer man. And it's not safe, with a lawyer at hand to find you out. Nothing is hidden from some people, and you don't tell me that where you found a ram's horn, you didn't find a yellow lady's slipper. What did I tell you? What? I'd blush, I would. Don't you defend yourself. If it was there, where is it now, the yellow lady's slipper? Well, wait, it's common, it's too common. Common, the purple lady's slipper's commoner. I didn't bring a purple lady's slipper to you. To you, I mean, they're both too common. The lawyer gave a laugh among his papers, as if with some idea that she had scored. I've broken Anne of gathering bouquets, it's not fair to the child. It can't be helped, though pressed into service means pressed out of shape. Somehow I'll make it right with her, she'll see, she's going to do my scouting in the field, over stone walls and all along a wood. And by a riverbank for water flowers, the floating heart with small leaf like a heart, and at the sinus, under water a fist of little fingers all kept down but one, and that thrust up to blossom in the sun, as if to say, you're the heart's desire. Anne has a way with flowers to take the place of that she's lost. She goes down on one knee and lifts their faces by the chin to hers and says their names and leaves them where they are. The lawyer wore a watch, the case of which was cunningly devised to make a noise. Like a small pistol when he snapped it shut at such a time as this, he snapped it now. Well, Anne, go, dearie. Our affair will wait. The lawyer man is thinking of his train. He wants to give me lots and lots of money before he goes because I hurt myself, and it may take him I don't know how long, but put our flowers in water first. We'll help her, the pitcher's too full for her. There's no cup, just hook them on the inside of the pitcher. Now run. Get out your documents, you see. I have to keep on the good side of Anne. I'm a great boy to think of number one, and you can't blame me in the place I'm in. Who will take care of my necessities unless I do? A pretty interlude, the lawyer said. I'm sorry, but my train. Luckily, terms are all agreed upon. You only have to sign your name. Right there. You will stop making faces. Come round here where you can't make them. What is it you want? I'll put you out with Anne. Be good or go. You don't mean you will sign that thing unread. Make yourself useful then and read it for me. Isn't it something I have seen before? You'll find it is. Let your friend look at it. Yes, but all that takes time, and I'm as much in haste to get it over with as you, but read it, read it. That's right, draw the curtain, half the time I don't know what's troubling me. What do you say, Will? Don't you be a fool, you, crumpling folks' legal documents. Out with it if you've any real objection. $500. What would you think, right? $1,000 wouldn't be a cent too much, you know it, Mr. Lawyer. The sin is accepting anything before he knows whether he's ever going to walk again. It smells to me like a dishonest trick. I think from what I heard today and saw myself, he would be ill-advised. What did you hear, for instance? Willis said. Now the place where the accident occurred? The broken one was twisted in his bed. This is between you two, apparently. Where I come in is what I want to know. You stand up to it like a pair of cocks. Go outdoors if you want to fight. Spare me when you come back, I'll have the papers signed. Will pencil do? Then please, your fountain pen, one of you hold my head up from the pillow. Willis flung off the bed. I wash my hands, no match no, and don't pretend to be. The lawyer gravely capped his fountain pen. You're doing the wise thing, you won't regret it, we're very sorry for you. Willis sneered. Who's? We, some stockholders in Boston, I'll go outdoors, by gad. And won't come back. Willis, bring Anne back with you when you come, yes. Thanks for caring. Don't mind Will, he's savage, he thinks you ought to pay me for my flowers, you don't know what I mean about the flowers, don't stop to try now, you'll miss your train, goodbye. He flung his arms around his face, the hill wife, loneliness, her word. One ought not to have to care, so much as you and I, care when the birds come round the house, to seem to say goodbye or care so much when they come back. With whatever it is they sing, the truth being we are as much, too glad for the one thing as we are too sad for the other here, with birds that fill their breasts, but with each other and themselves, and their built or driven nests, house fear, always, I tell you this they learned, always at night when they returned, to the lonely house from far away, to lamps unlighted and fire gone gray, they learned to rattle the lock and key, to give whatever might chance to be. Warning in time to be off in flight, and preferring the out to the indoor night, they learned to leave the house door wide, until they had lit the lamp inside, the smile, her word. I didn't like the way he went away, that smile. It never came of being gay. Still, he smiled, did you see him? I was sure, perhaps because we gave him only bread, and the wretch knew from that we were poor, perhaps because he let us give instead of seizing from us as he might have seized. Perhaps he mocked at us for being wed. Or being very young, and he was pleased to have a vision of us old and dead. I wonder how far down the road he's got. He's watching from the woods as like as not. The OFT repeated dream, she had no saying dark enough for the dark pine that kept, forever trying the window latch of the room where they slept, the tireless but ineffectual hands that with every futile pass made the great tree seem as a little bird. Before the mystery of glass, it never had been inside the room, and only one of the two. Was afraid in an oft-repeated dream of what the tree might do, the impulse. It was too lonely for her there and too wild, and since there were but two of them and no child and work was little in the house, she was free and followed where he furrowed field or felled tree. She rested on a log and tossed the fresh chips with a song only to herself on her lips, and once she went to break a bough of black alder. She strayed so far she scarcely heard when he called her and didn't answer, didn't speak or return. She stood and then she ran and hid in the fern. He never found her, though he looked everywhere, and he asked at her mother's house. Was she there? Sudden and swift and light as that, the ties gave, and he learned of finalities besides the grave. Out, out. The buzzsaw snarled and rattled in the yard and made dust and dropped stove-length sticks of wood, sweet-scented stuff when the breeze drew across it, and from there those that lifted eyes could count. Five mountain ranges one behind the other. Under the sunset far into Vermont, and the saw snarled and rattled, as it ran light or had to bear a load, and nothing happened. Day was all but done, call it a day, I wish they might have said, to please the boy by giving him the half hour, that a boy counts so much when saved from work. His sister stood beside them in her apron, to tell them supper. At the word, the saw, as if to prove saws knew what supper meant, leaped out at the boy's hand or seemed to leap. He must have given the hand, however it was, neither refused the meeting. But the hand, the boy's first outcry was a rueful laugh as he swung toward them holding up the hand, half in appeal but half as if to keep the life from spilling. Then the boy saw all, since he was old enough to know, big boy, doing a man's work though a child at heart, he saw all spoiled. Don't let him cut my hand of, the doctor, when he comes. Don't let him, sister. So. But the hand was gone already. The doctor put him in the dark of ether. He lay and puffed his lips out with his breath, and then the watcher at his pulse took fright. No one believed. They listened at his heart, little, less, nothing, and that ended it, no more to build on there. And they, since they were not the one dead, turned to their affairs, Roman 3, putting in the seed, you come to fetch me from my work tonight, when supper's on the table and we'll see if I can leave off burying the white, soft petals fallen from the apple tree. Soft petals, yes, but not so barren quite. Mingled with these, smooth bean and wrinkled, pea, and go along with you ere you lose sight of what you came for and become like me, slave to a springtime passion for the earth. How love bums through the pudding and the seed. On through the watching for that early birth, when just as the soil tarnishes with weed, the sturdy seedling with arched body comes, shouldering its way and shedding the earth crumbs, going for water, the well was dry beside the door, and so we went with pail and can, across the fields behind the house, to seek the brook if still it ran, not loth to have excuse to go, because the autumn eve was fair. Though chill, because the fields were ours, and by the brook our woods were there, we ran as if to meet the moon. That slowly dawned behind the trees, the barren boughs without the leaves, without the birds, without the breeze, but once within the wood we paused, like gnomes that hid us from the moon, ready to run to hiding new, with laughter when she found us soon, each laid on other a staying hand, to listen ere we dared to look, and in the hush we joined to make. We heard, we knew we heard the brook, a note as from a single place, a slender tinkling fall that made, now drops that floated on the pool. Like pearls and now a silver blade, mowing, there was never a sound beside the wood but one, and that was my long scythe whispering to the ground. What was it whispered? I knew not well myself, perhaps it was something about the heat of the sun, something perhaps about the lack of sound, and that was why it whispered and did not speak. It was no dream of the gift of idle hours, or easy gold at the hand of fay or elf, anything more than the truth would have seemed, too weak. To the earnest love that laid the swale in rows, not without feeble-pointed spikes of flowers, pale orchises, and scared a bright green snake, the fact is the sweetest dream that labor knows. My long scythe whispered and left the hay to make, Roman 4, after apple picking, my long two-pointed ladder sticking through a tree, toward heaven still, and there's a barrel that I didn't fill, beside it, and there may be two or three, apples I didn't pick upon some bough, but I am done with apple picking now. Essence of winter sleep is on the night, the scent of apples, I am drowsing off, I cannot rub the strangeness from my sight, I got from looking through a pane of glass, I skimmed this morning from the drinking trough and held against the world of hoary grass, it melted and I let it fall and break, but I was well, upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. My instep arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend, and I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in, for I have had too much of apple picking, I am overtired, of the great harvest I myself desired, there were 10,000,000 fruit to touch, cherish in hand, lift down, and not let fall, for all, that struck the earth, no matter if not bruised or spiked with stubble. Went surely to the cider apple heap, as of no worth, one can see what will trouble, this sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is, were he not gone, the woodchuck could say whether it's like his, long sleep, as I describe its coming on, or just some human sleep, birches, when I see birches bend to left and right, across the lines of straighter, darker trees, I like to think some boy's been swinging them. But swinging doesn't bend them down to stay, ice storms do that. Often you must have seen them. Loaded with ice a sunny winter morning, after a rain, they click upon themselves, as the breeze rises and turn many-colored, as the stir cracks and crazes their enamel, soon the sun's warmth makes them shed crystal shells, shattering and avalanching on the snow crust. Such heaps of broken glass to sweep away, you'd think the inner dome of heaven had fallen. They are dragged to the withered bracken by the load, and they seem not to break, though once they are bowed. So low for long, they never right themselves. You may see their trunks arching in the woods, years afterwards trailing their leaves on the ground, like girls on hands and knees that throw their hair before them over their heads to dry in the sun. But I was going to say when Truth broke in, with all her matter of fact about the ice storm, I should prefer to have some boy bend them, as he went out and in to fetch the cows. Some boy too far from town to learn baseball, whose only play was what he found himself. Summer or winter, and could play alone. One by one he subdued his father's trees, by riding them down over and over again, until he took the stiffness out of them, and not one but hung limp, not one was left for him to conquer. He learned all there was, to learn about not launching out too soon, and so not carrying the tree away, clear to the ground. He always kept his poise, to the top branches, climbing carefully, with the same pains you use to fill a cup, up to the brim, and even above the brim. Then he flung outward, feet first, with a swish, kicking his way down through the air to the ground. So was I once myself a swinger of birches. And so I dream of going back to be, it's when I'm weary of considerations, and life is too much like a pathless wood, where your face burns and tickles with the cobwebs, broken across it, and one eye is weeping, from a twig's having lashed across it open. I'd like to get away from Earth a while, and then come back to it and begin over. May no fate willfully misunderstand me, and half grant what I wish and snatch me away, not to return. Earth's the right place for love. I don't know where it's likely to go better. I'd like to go by climbing a birch tree, and climb black branches up a snow-white trunk, toward heaven, till the tree could bear no more, but dipped its top and set me down again. That would be good both going and coming back. One could do worse than be a swinger of birches. The gum gatherer there overtook me and drew me in to his downhill early morning stride, and set me 5 miles on my road, better than if he had had me ride. A man with a swinging bag for load, and half the bag wound round his hand. We talked like barking above the din of water we walked along beside, and for my telling him where I'd been, and where I lived in mountain land, to be coming home the way I was. He told me a little about himself. He came from higher up in the pass, where the grist of the new beginning brooks. His block split off the mountain mass, and hopeless grist enough it looks, ever to grind to soil for grass. The way it is will do for moss. There he had built his stolen shack. It had to be a stolen shack, because of the fears of fire and loss that trouble the sleep of lumber folk, visions of half the world burned black, and the sun shrunken yellow in smoke. We know who, when they come to town, bring berries under the wagon seat, or a basket of eggs between their feet, what this man brought in a cotton sack. Was gum, the gum of the mountain spruce. He showed me lumps of the scented stuff, like uncut jewels, dull and rough. It comes to market golden brown, but turns to pink between the teeth. I told him this is a pleasant life, to set your breast to the bark of trees, that all your days are dim beneath, and reaching up with a little knife, to loose the resin and take it down, and bring it to market when you please, the mountain. The mountain held the town as in a shadow. I saw so much before I slept there once. I noticed that I missed stars in the west, where its black body cut into the sky, near me it seemed. I felt it like a wall, behind which I was sheltered from a wind, and yet between the town and it I found, when I walked forth at dawn to see new things, were fields, a river, and beyond, more fields. The river at the time was fallen away, and made a widespread brawl on cobblestones, but the signs showed what it had done in spring, good grassland gullied out, and in the grass, ridges of sand and driftwood stripped of bark. I crossed the river and swung round the mountain, and there I met a man who moved so slow, with white-faced oxen in a heavy cart, it seemed no harm to stop him altogether. "What town is this?" I asked. "This, Lunenburg." Then I was wrong. The town of my sojourn, beyond the bridge, was not that of the mountain, but only felt at night its shadowy presence. "Where is your village?" "Very far from here." "There is no village, only scattered farms. We were but 60 voters last election. We can't in nature grow to many more. That thing takes all the room." He moved his goad. The mountain stood there to be pointed at. Pasture ran up the side a little way, and then there was a wall of trees with trunks, after that only tops of trees and cliffs, imperfectly concealed among the leaves. A dry ravine emerged from under boughs. "Into the pasture. That looks like a path. Is that the way to reach the top from here?" "Not for this morning, but some other time. I must be getting back to breakfast now." "I don't advise your trying from this side. There is no proper path, but those that have been up, I understand, have climbed from lads. That's 5 miles back. You can't mistake the place. They logged it there last winter some way up. I'd take you, but I'm bound the other way. You've never climbed it." "I've been on the sides. Deer hunting and trout fishing. There's a brook. That starts up on it somewhere. I've heard say, right on the top, tip-top, a curious thing. But what would interest you about the brook? It's always cold in summer, warm in winter. One of the great sights going is to see it steam in winter like an ox's breath, until the bushes all along its banks are inch deep with the frosty spines and bristles, you know the kind. Then let the sun shine on it. There ought to be a view around the world. From such a mountain, if it isn't wooded, clear to the top. I saw through leafy screens, great granite terraces in sun and shadow, shelves one could rest a knee on getting up, with depths behind him sheer 100 feet, or turn and sit on and look out and down, with little ferns and crevices at his elbowy. As to that, I can't say. But there's the spring, right on the summit, almost like a fountain, that ought to be worth seeing. If it's there, you never saw it. I guess there's no doubt about its being there. I never saw it. It may not be right on the very top. It wouldn't have to be a long way down to have some head of water from above, and a good distance down might not be noticed by anyone who'd come a long way up. One time I asked a fellow climbing it to look and tell me later how it was. What did he say? He said there was a lake somewhere in Ireland on a mountain top. But a lake's different. What about the spring? He never got up high enough to see. That's why I don't advise you trying this side. He tried this side. I've always meant to go and look myself, but you know how it is. It doesn't seem so much to climb a mountain. You've worked around the foot of all your life. What would I do? Go in my overalls, with a big stick, the same as when the cows. Haven't come down to the bars at milking time, or with a shotgun for a stray black bear. Tool didn't seem real to climb for climbing it. I shouldn't climb it if I didn't want to, not for the sake of climbing. What's its name? We call it whore. I don't know if that's right. Can one walk round it? Would it be too far? You can drive round and keep in Lunenburg, but it's as much as ever you can do. The boundary lines keep in so close to it. Whore is the township and the township's whore, and a few houses sprinkled round the foot, like boulders broken off the upper cliff, rolled out a little farther than the rest. Warm in December, cold in June, you say? I don't suppose the water's changed at all. You and I know enough to know it's warm, compared with cold, and cold compared with warm, but all the fun's in how you say a thing. You've lived here all your life? Ever since whore was no bigger than a... What, I did not hear. He drew the oxen toward him with light touches of his slim goad on nose and offside flank, gave them their marching orders, and was moving, the tuft of flowers. I went to turn the grass once after one, who mowed it in the dew before the sun. The dew was gone that made his blade so keen. Before I came to view the leveled scene, I looked for him behind an aisle of trees, I listened for his whetstone on the breeze. But he had gone his way, the grass all mown, and I must be as he had been alone, as all must be, I said within my heart, whether they work together or apart. But as I said it, swift there passed me by, on noiseless wing a bewildered butterfly, seeking with memories grown dim o'ernight, some resting flower of yesterday's delight. And once I marked his flight go round and round, as where some flower lay withering on the ground, and then he flew as far as I could see, and then on tremulous wing came back to me. I thought of questions that have no reply, and would have turned to toss the grass to dry, but he turned first and led my eye to look at a tall tuft of flowers beside a brook, a leaping tongue of bloom the scythe had spared, beside a reedy brook the scythe had bared. I left my place to know them by their name. Finding them butterfly weed when I came, the mower in the dew had loved them thus, by leaving them to flourish not for us, nor yet to draw one thought of ours to him, but from sheer morning gladness at the brim, the butterfly and I had lit upon, nevertheless, a message from the dawn, that made me hear the wakening birds around, and hear his long scythe whispering to the ground, and feel a spirit kindred to my own, so that henceforth I worked no more alone, but glad with him, I worked as with his aid. And weary, sought at noon with him the shade, and dreaming, as it were, held brotherly speech, with one whose thought I had not hoped to reach. Men work together, I told him from the heart, whether they work together or apart. Mending wall, something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it, and spills the upper boulders in the sun, and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing, I have come after them and made repair. Where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding, to please the yelping dogs. The gaps I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line, and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves and some so nearly balls. We have to use a spell to make them balance, stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more, there where it is we do not need the wall, he is all pine and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across, and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder. If I could put a notion in his head, why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows, before I built a wall I'd ask to know, what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense, something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather, he said it for himself. I see him there, bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top, in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well. He says again, good fences make good neighbors. An encounter once on the kind of day called weather breeder, when the heat slowly hazes and the sun, by its own power seems to be undone. I was half boring through, half climbing through, a swamp of cedar, choked with oil of cedar and scurf of plants and weary and overheated. And sorry I ever left the road I knew. I paused and rested on a sort of hook that had me by the coat as good as seated, and since there was no other way to look, looked up toward heaven, and there against the blue stood over me a resurrected tree, a tree that had been down and raised again, a barkless specter. He had halted too, as if for fear of treading upon me. I saw the strange position of his hands, up at his shoulders, dragging yellow strands of wire with something in it from men to men. "You here?" I said. "Where aren't you nowadays, and what's the news you carry? If you know and tell me where you're off for, Montreal me, I'm not off for anywhere at all. Sometimes I wander out of beaten ways, half looking for the orchid Calypso." The woodpile. Out walking in the frozen swamp one gray day, I paused and said, "I will turn back from here. No, I will go on farther and we shall see." The hard snow held me, save where now and then one foot went through. The view was all in lines. Straight up and down of tall, slim trees, too much alike to mark or name a place by, so as to say for certain I was here, or somewhere else. I was just far from home, a small bird flew before me. He was careful to put a tree between us when he lighted, and say no word to tell me who he was, who was so foolish as to think what he thought. He thought that I was after him for a feather, the white one in his tail, like one who takes, everything said as personal to himself. One flight out sideways would have undeceived him, and then there was a pile of wood for which I forgot him and let his little fear carry him off the way I might have gone, without so much as wishing him good night. He went behind it to make his last stand. It was a cord of maple, cut and split, and piled and measured 4 by 4 by 8, and not another like it could I see, no runner tracks in this year's snow loop near it, and it was older sure than this year's cutting, or even last year's or the year's before. The wood was gray and the bark warping off it, and the pile somewhat sunken. Clematis had wound strings round and round it like a bundle. What held it, though, on one side was a tree, still growing, and on one a stake and prop, these latter about to fall. I thought that only someone who lived in turning to fresh tasks could so forget his handiwork on which he spent himself, the labor of his axe, and leave it there far from a useful fireplace, to warm the frozen swamp as best it could. With the slow, smokeless burning of decay. Snow, the three stood listening to a fresh access of wind that caught against the house a moment, gulped snow and then blew free again the coals, dressed but disheveled from some hours of sleep. Messerve belittled in the great skin coat he wore. Messerve was first to speak. He pointed backward, over his shoulder with his pipe stem, saying, "You can just see it glancing off the roof, making a great scroll upward toward the sky. Long enough for recording all our names on, I think I'll just call up my wife and tell her I'm here so far and starting on again. I'll call her softly so that if she's wise and gone to sleep, she needn't wake to answer." 3 times he barely stirred the bell, then listened. "Why, let still up. Let, I'm at Cole's, I'm late. I called you up to say good night from here before I went to say good morning there. I thought I would. I know, but let, I know. I could, but what's the sense? The rest won't be so bad, give me an hour for it. Ho, ho, 3 hours to hear, but that was all uphill, the rest is down. Why, no, no, not a wallow, they kept their heads and took their time to it, like darlings, both of them, there in the barn. My dear, I'm coming just the same. I didn't call you to ask you to invite me home." He lingered for some word she wouldn't say, said it at last himself, good night, and then, getting no answer, closed the telephone. The three stood in the lamplight round the table. Lowered eyes a moment till he said, "I'll just see how the horses are." "Yes, do," both the Coles said together. Mrs. Cole added, "You can judge better after seeing. I want you here with me, Fred. Leave him here, Brother Messerve. You know to find your way out through the shed." "I guess I know my way. I guess I know where I can find my name, carved in the shed to tell me who I am. If it don't tell me where I am, I used to play. You tend your horses and come back. Fred Cole, you're going to let him." "Well, aren't you? How can you help yourself?" I called him brother. Why did I call him that? It's right enough. That's all you ever heard him called round here. He seems to have lost off his Christian name. Christian enough I should call that myself. He took no notice, did he? Well, at least, I didn't use it out of love of him, the dear knows. I detest the thought of him, with his 10 children under 10 years old. I hate his wretched little racker sect, all's ever I heard of it, which isn't much. But that's not saying. Look, Fred Cole, it's 12, isn't it now? He's been here half an hour. He says he left the village store at 9. 3 hours to do 4 miles, a mile an hour, or not much better. Why, it doesn't seem as if a man could move that slow and move. Try to think what he did with all that time, and 3 miles more to go. Don't let him go, stick to him, Helen. Make him answer you. That sort of man talks straight on all his life, from the last thing he said himself, stone deaf. To anything anyone else may say, I should have thought, though, you could make him hear you. What is he doing out a night like this? Why can't he stay at home? He had to preach. It's no night to be out. He may be small, he may be good, but one thing's sure, he's tough, and strong of stale tobacco. He'll pull through. You only say so, not another house or shelter to put into from this place, to theirs. I'm going to call his wife again. wait and he may, let's see what he will do. Let's see if he will think of her again, but then I doubt he's thinking of himself, he doesn't look on it as anything. He shan't go there. It is a night, my dear. One thing, he dicing drag God into it. He don't consider it a case for God. You think so, do you? You don't know the kind, he's getting up a miracle this minute, privately to himself, right now, he's thinking. He'll make a case of it if he succeeds, but keep still if he fails. Keep still all over. He'll be dead, dead and buried. Such a trouble not, but I've every reason not to care. What happens to him if it only takes some of the sanctimonious conceit out of one of those pious scalawags? Nonsense to that, you want to see him safe. You like the runt, don't you a little? Well, I don't like what he's doing, which is what you like and like him for. Oh yes, you do. You like your fun as well as anyone, only you women have to put these airs on to impress men. You've got us so ashamed. Of being men, we can't look at a good fight between two boys and not feel bound to stop it. Let the man freeze an ear or two, I say. He's here, I leave him all to you. Go in and save his life. All right, come in, Messerve. Sit down, sit down. How did you find the horses? Fine, fine. And ready for some more? My wife here says it won't do. You've got to give it up. Want you to please me? Please, if I say please, mister. Messerve, I'll leave it to your wife. What did your wife say on the telephone? Messerve seemed to heed nothing but the lamp, or something not far from it on the table, by straightening out and lifting a forefinger. He pointed with his hand from where it lay, like a white crumpled spider on his knee. That leaf there in your open book. It moved, just then, I thought. It stood erect like that, there on the table, ever since I came, trying to turn itself backward or forward. I've had my eye on it to make out which, if forward, then it's with a friend's impatience. You see, I know, to get you onto things. It wants to see how you will take, if backward. It's from regret for something you have passed and failed to see the good of. Never mind, things must expect to come in front of us. A many times, I don't say just how many. That varies with the things before we see them. One of the lies would make it out that nothing ever presents itself before us twice. Where would we be at last if that were so? Our very life depends on everything's. Recurring till we answer from within, the thousandth time may prove the charm. That leaf, it can't turn either way. It needs the wind's help, but the wind didn't move it. If it moved, it moved itself. The wind's at naught in here. It couldn't stir so sensitively poised, a thing as that. It couldn't reach the lamp to get a puff of black smoke from the flame or blow a rumple in the collie's coat. You make a little four-square block of air. Quiet and light and warm in spite of all, the illimitable dark and cold and storm, and by so doing give these three, lamp, dog, and bookleaf that keep near you their repose, though for all anyone can tell, repose may be the thing you haven't, yet you give it. So false it is that what we haven't we can't give, so false that what we always say is true. I'll have to turn the leaf if no one else will. It won't lie down. Then let it stand. Who cares? I shouldn't want to hurry you, Messerve. But if you're going, say you'll stay, you know? But let me raise this curtain on a scene and show you how it's piling up against you. You see the snow white through the white of frost. Ask Helen how far up the sash it's climbed since last we read the gauge. It looks as if some pallid thing had squashed its features flat and its eyes shut with overeagerness to see what people found so interesting in one another and had gone to sleep of its own stupid lack of understanding or broken its white neck of mushroom stuff. Short off and died against the window pane. Brother Messerve, take care, you'll scare yourself more than you will us with such nightmare talk. It's you it matters to, because it's you who have to go out into it alone. Let him talk, Helen, and perhaps he'll stay. Before you drop the curtain, I'm reminded, you recollect the boy who came out here to breathe the air one winter had a room down at the Averys? Well, one sunny morning, after a downy storm, he passed our place and found me banking up the house with snow, and I was burrowing in deep for warmth, piling it well above the windowsills. The snow against the window caught his eye. Hey, that's a pretty thought, those were his words. So you can think it's 6 feet deep outside, while you sit warm and read up balanced rations, you can't get too much winter in the winter. Those were his words. And he went home and all, but banked the daylight out of Avery's windows. Now you and I would go to no such length. At the same time, you can't deny it makes it not a mite worse sitting here, we three, playing our fancy to have the snowline run so high across the pane outside. There where there is a sort of tunnel in the frost, more like a tunnel than a hole way down, at the far end of it you see a stir, and quiver like the frayed edge of the drift, blown in the wind. I like that, I like that. Well, now I leave you people. Come, Messerve, we thought you were deciding not to go, the ways you found to say the praise of comfort. And being where you are, you want to stay. I'll own it's cold for such a fall of snow. This house is frozen brittle all except this room you sit in. If you think the wind sounds further off, it's not because it's dying, you're further under in the snow, that's all, and feel it less. Hear the soft bombs of dust. It bursts against us at the chimney mouth and at the eaves. I like it from inside, more than I shall out in it. But the horses are rested, and it's time to say good night and let you get to bed again. Good night. Sorry I had to break in on your sleep. Lucky for you, you did. Lucky for you, you had us for a halfway station to stop at. If you were the kind of man, paid heed to women, you'd take my advice, and for your family's sake, stay where you are. But what good is my saying it over and over? You've done more than you had a right to think you could do. Now you know the risk you take in going on. Our snowstorms, as a rule, aren't looked on as man-killers, and although I'd rather be the beast that sleeps the sleep. Under it all, his door sealed up and lost, than the man fighting it to keep above it. Yet think of the small birds at roost and not in nests. Shall I be counted less than they are? Their bulk in water would be frozen rock, in no time out tonight. And yet tomorrow they will come budding boughs from tree to tree, flirting their wings and saying chickadee, as if not knowing what you meant by the word storm. But why, when no one wants you to go on, your wife? She doesn't want you to. We don't. You yourself don't want to. Who else is there? Save us from being cornered by a woman. Well, there's, she told Fred afterward, that in the pause right there, she thought the dreaded word was coming, God. But no, he only said, well, there's the storm. That says I must go on. That wants me as a war might if it came, ask any man. He threw her that as something, to last her till he got outside the door. He had Cole with him to the barn to see him off. When Cole returned, he found his wife still standing beside the table near the open book, not reading it. Well, what kind of a man do you call that? She said. He had the gift of words, or is it tongues, I ought to say? Was ever such a man for seeing likeness? Or disregarding peopled civil questions? What, we found out in 1 hour more about him than we had seeing him pass by in the road, 1,000 times, if that's the way he preaches. You didn't think you'd keep him after all. Oh, I'm not blaming you. He didn't leave you much say in the matter, and I'm just as glad. We're not in for a night of him. No sleep if he had stayed. The least thing set him going, it's quiet as an empty church without him. But how much better off are we as it is? We'll have to sit here till we know he's safe. Yes, I suppose you'll want to, but I shouldn't. He knows what he can do, or he wouldn't try. Get into bed, I say, and get some rest. He won't come back, and if he telephones, it won't be for an hour or two. Well then, we can't be any help by sitting here and living his fight through with him, I suppose. Cole had been telephoning in the dark, Mrs. Cole's voice came from an inner room. Did she call you, or you call her? She me, you'd better dress. You won't go back to bed. We must have been asleep. It's 3 and after. Had she been ringing long? I'll get my wrapper. I want to speak to her. All she said was, he hadn't come, and had he really started? She knew he had, poor thing, 2 hours ago. He had the shovel. Hell have made a fight. Why did I ever let him leave this house? Don't begin that. You did the best you could to keep him, though perhaps you didn't quite conceal a wish to see him show the spunk to disobey you. Much his wife'll thank you. Fred, after all I said, you shan't make out that it was any way but what it was. Did she let on by any word she said she didn't thank me? When I told her gone, well then, she said, and well then, like a threat. And then her voice came scraping slow. Oh, you, why did you let him go? Asked why we let him, you let me there. I'll ask her why she let him. She didn't dare to speak when he was here. Their number's 21. The thing won't work. Someone's receiver's down. The handle stumbles. The stubborn thing, the way it jars your arm, it's theirs. She's dropped it from her hand and gone. Try speaking. Say hello, hello, hello. What do you hear? I hear an empty room. You know, it sounds that way. And yes, I hear. I think I hear a clock and windows rattling. No step, though. If she's there, she's sitting down. Shout, she may hear you. Shouting is no good. Keep speaking, then. Hello, 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 you don't suppose? She wouldn't go outdoors. I'm half afraid that's just what she might do. And leave the children? Wait and call again. You can't hear whether she has left the door wide open and the wind's blown out the lamp and the fire's died and the room's dark and cold. One of two things, either she's gone to bed or gone outdoors, in which case both are lost. Do you know what she's like? Have you ever met her? It's strange she doesn't want to speak to us. Fred, see if you can hear what I hear. Come, a clock maybe. Don't you hear something else? Not talking. No, why yes, I hear. What is it? What do you say it is? A baby's crying, frantic it sounds, though muffled and far off. Its mother wouldn't let it cry like that, not if she's there. Do you make of it? There's only one thing possible to make, that is, assuming that she has gone out. Of course she hasn't, though. They both sat down helpless. There's nothing we can do till morning. Fred, I shan't let you think of going out. Hold on. The double bell began to chirp. They started up. Fred took the telephone. Hello, Messerve, you're there then? And your wife good? Why, I asked, she didn't seem to answer. He says she went to let him in the barn. We're glad. Oh, say no more about it, man. Drop in and see us when you're passing. Well, she has him then, though. What she wants him for, I don't see. Possibly not for herself. Maybe she only wants him for the children. The whole to-do seems to have been for nothing. What spoiled our night was to him just his fun. What did he come in for? To talk and visit? Thought he'd just call to tell us it was snowing if he thinks he's going to make our house. A halfway coffee house, twixt town and nowhere. I thought you'd feel you'd been too much concerned. You think you haven't been concerned yourself. If you mean he was inconsiderate, to rout us out to think for him at midnight, and then take our advice no more than nothing. Why, I agree with you. But let's forgive him. We've had a share in one night of his life. What'll you bet he ever calls again? In the home stretch, she stood against the kitchen sink and looked. Over the sink out through a dusty window, at weeds the water from the sink made tall. She wore her cape, her hat was in her hand. Behind her was confusion in the room, of chairs turned upside down to sit like people. In other chairs and something come to look. For every room a house has, parlor, bedroom, and dining room, thrown pell-mell in the kitchen. And now and then a smudged, infernal face, looked in a door behind her and addressed, her back. She always answered without turning. Where will I put this walnut bureau, lady? Put it on top of something that's on top of something else, she laughed. Oh, put it where you can tonight and go. It's almost dark, you must be getting started back to town. Another blackened face thrust in and looked and smiled, and when she did not turn, spoke. Gently, what are you seeing out the window, lady? Never was I beladied so before, would evidence of having been called lady. More than so many times make me a lady. In common law, I wonder. But I ask, what are you seeing out the window, lady? What I'll be seeing more of in the years, to come as here I stand and go the round, of many plates with towels many times. And what is that, you only put me off? Rank weeds that love the water from the dishpan, more than some women like the dishpan, Joe, a little stretch of mowing field for you, not much of that until I come to woods, that end all. And it's scarce enough to call. A view, and yet you think you like it, dear? That's what you're so concerned to know, you hope I like it. Bang goes something big away off there upstairs. The very tread of men as great as those is shattering to the frame of such a little house. Once left alone, you and I, dear, will go with softer steps, up and down stairs and through the rooms, and none, but sudden winds that snatch them from our hands, will ever slam the doors. I think you see, more than you like to own to out that window. No, for besides the things I tell you of, I only see the years. They come and go, in alternation with the weeds, the field, the wood. What kind of years? Why, latter years, different from early years. I see them too, you didn't count them. No, the further off, so ran together that I didn't try to, it can scarce be that they would be in number. We'd care to know, for we are not young now, and bang goes something else away off there. It sounds as if it were the men went down. And every crash meant one less to return. To lighted city streets we too have known, but now are giving up for country darkness. Come from that window where you see too much for me, and take a livelier view of things from here, they're going. Watch this husky swarming up, over the wheel into the sky-high seat, lighting his pipe now, squinting down his nose, at the flame burning downward as he sucks it. See how it makes his nose side bright, a proof, how dark it's getting. Can you tell what time it is by that? Or by the moon, the new moon, what shoulder did I see her over? Neither. A wire she is of silver, as new as we to everything. Her light won't last us long, it's something though to know we're going to have her night after night and stronger every night to see us through our first 2 weeks. But Joe, the stove, before they go, knock on the window, ask them to help you get it on its feet. We stand here dreaming. Hurry, call them back. They're not gone yet. We've got to have the stove, whatever else we want for. And a light, have we a piece of candle if the lamp and oil are buried out of reach? Again, the house was full of tramping and the dark, door-filling men burst in and seized the stove. A cannon-mouth-like hole was in the wall, to which they set it true by eye and then came up the jointed stovepipe in their hands, so much too light and airy for their strength, it almost seemed to come ballooning up, slipping from clumsy clutches toward the ceiling. A fit, said one, and banged a stovepipe shoulder. It's good luck when you move in to begin with good luck with your stovepipe. Never mind, it's not so bad in the country, settled down, when people ray getting on in life. You'll like it, Joe said. You big boys ought to find a farm and make good farmers and leave other fellows, the city work to do. There's not enough for everybody as it is in there. God, one said wildly, and when no one spoke, say that to Jimmy here. He needs a farm. But Jimmy only made his jaw recede. Fool-like and rolled his eyes as if to say he saw himself a farmer. Then there was a French boy who said with seriousness that made them laugh, "Ma friend, you ain't know what it is you're ask." He doffed his cap and held it with both hands across his chest to make his twir a bow, "We're giving you our chances on to farm." And then they all turned to with deafening boots and put each other bodily out of the house. Good be to them, we puzzle them, they think. I don't know what they think we see and what. They leave us to that pasture slope that seems, the back some farm presents us, and your woods to northward from your window at the sink, waiting to steal a step on us whenever we drop our eyes or turn to other things, as in the game 10-step the children play. Good boys they seemed and let them love the city, all they could say was God. When you proposed, they're coming out and making useful farmers. Did they make something lonesome go through? You it would take more than them to sicken you, us of our bargain. But they left us so, as to our fate like fools past reasoning with, they almost shook me. It's all so much what we have always wanted, I confess. It's seeming bad for a moment makes it seem, even worse still, and so on down, 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 it's nothing, it's their leaving us at dusk. I never bore it well when people went. The first night after guests have gone, the house seems haunted or exposed. I always take a personal interest in the locking up, at bedtime, but the strangeness soon wears off. He fetched a dingy lantern from behind a door. There's that we didn't lose, and these, some matches he unpocketed. For food, the meals we've had no one can take from us. I wish that everything on earth were just as certain as the meals we've had. I wish the meals we haven't had were, anyway, what if you know where to lay your hands on? The bread we bought in passing at the store, there's butter somewhere, too. Let's rend the bread. I'll light the fire for company for you, you'll not have any other company. Till Eid begins to get out on a Sunday, to look us over and give us his idea of what wants pruning, shingling, breaking up. He'll know what he would do if he were we and all at once. He'll plan for us and plan to help us, but he'll take it out in planning. Well, you can set the table with the loaf. Let's see you find your loaf. I'll light the fire. I like chairs occupying other chairs, not offering a lady. There again, Joe, you're tired. I'm drunk, nonsensical, tired out. Don't mind a word I say. It's a day's work to empty one house of all household goods and fill another with them 15 miles away, although you do no more than dump them down. Dumped down in paradise, we are unhappy. It's all so much what I have always wanted. I can't believe it's what you wanted, too. Shouldn't you like to know? I'd like to know, if it is what you wanted, then how much you wanted it for me. A troubled conscience you don't want me to tell if. I don't know. I don't want to find out what can't be known. But who first said the word to come? My dear, it's who first thought the thought. You're searching, Joe, for things that don't exist. I mean beginnings, ends and beginnings. There are no such things. There are only middles. What is this? This life. Our sitting here by lantern light together. Amid the wreckage of a former home, you won't deny the lantern isn't new. The stove is not, and you are not to me, nor I to you. Perhaps you never were. It would take me forever to recite all that's not new and where we find ourselves. New is a word for fools in towns who think. Style upon style in dress and thought at last must get somewhere. I've heard you say as much. No, this is no beginning. Then an end? End is a gloomy word. Is it too late? To drag you out for just a good night call, on the old peach trees on the knoll to grope, by starlight in the grass for a last peach, the neighbors may not have taken as their right, when the house wasn't lived in. I've been looking, I doubt if they have left us many grapes, before we set ourselves to right the house. The first thing in the morning, out we go, to go the round of apple, cherry, peach, pine, alder, pasture, mowing, well, and brook, all of a farm it is. I know this much, I'm going to put you in your bed, if first. I have to make you build it. Come the light. When there was no more lantern in the kitchen, the fire got out through crannies in the stove and danced in yellow wrigglers on the ceiling, as much at home as if they'd always danced there. VI, the road not taken, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both, and be one traveler, long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim. Because it was grassy and wanted wear, though, as for that the passing there, had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay. In leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference, the oven bird. There is a singer everyone has heard, loud, a midsummer and a midwood bird, who makes the solid tree trunk sound again. He says that leaves are old and that for flowers. Midsummer is to spring as 1 to 10. He says the early petal fall is past. When pear and cherry bloom went down in showers, on sunny days a moment overcast, and comes that other fall we name the fall. He says the highway dust is over all. The bird would cease and be as other birds, but that he knows in singing not to sing. The question that he frames in all but words is what to make of a diminished thing, a vantage point. If tired of trees, I seek again mankind. Well, I know where to hie me in the dawn, to a slope where the cattle keep the lawn, there amid lolling juniper reclined, myself unseen, I see in white defined, far off the homes of men, and farther still, the graves of men on an opposing hill, living or dead, whichever are most to mind. And if by noon I have too much of these, I have but to turn on my arm, and lo. The sun-burned hillside sets my face aglow. My breathing shakes the bluet like a breeze. I smell the earth, I smell the bruised plant, I look into the crater of the ant. The sound of trees, I wonder about the trees, why do we wish to bear? Forever the noise of these, more than another noise. So close to our dwelling place, we suffer them by the day, till we lose all measure of pace and fixity in our joys, and acquire a listening air, they are that talks of going. But never gets away, and that talks no less for knowing, as it grows wiser and older. That now it means to stay, my feet tug at the floor, and my head sways to my shoulder. Sometimes when I watch trees sway, from the window or the door I shall set forth for somewhere, I shall make the reckless choice, some day when they are in voice, and tossing so as to scare, the white clouds over them on, I shall have less to say, but I shall be gone, Hyla Brook, by June our brooks run out of song and speed. Sought for much after that, it will be found, either to have gone groping underground, and taken with it all the Hyla breed, that shouted in the mist a month ago, like ghost of sleigh bells in a ghost of snow, or flourished and come up in jewelweed, weak foliage that is blown upon and bent, even against the way its waters went. Its bed is left a faded paper sheet of dead leaves stuck together by the heat. A brook to none but who remember long, this as it will be seen is other far. Then with brooks take another wear in song. We love the things we love for what they are, my November guest. My sorrow, when she's here with me, thinks these dark days of autumn rain are beautiful as days can be. She loves the bare, the withered tree. She walks the sodden pasture lane. Her pleasure will not let me stay. She talks, and I am fain to list. She's glad the birds are gone away. She's glad her simple worsted gray is silver now with clinging mist, the desolate, deserted trees, the faded earth, the heavy sky. The beauties she so truly sees, she thinks I have no eye for these, and vexes me for reason why not yesterday I learned to know the love of bare November days before the coming of the snow, but it were vain to tell her so, and they are better for her praise, range-finding. The battle rent a cobweb diamond strung, and cut a flower beside a ground bird's nest, before it stained a single human breast. The stricken flower bent double and so hung, and still the bird revisited her young. A butterfly its fall had dispossessed, a moment sought in air his flower of rest, then lightly stooped to it and fluttering clung, on the bare upland pasture there had spread, ornite twixt mullein stalks a wheel of thread, and straining cables wet with silver dew, a sudden passing bullet shook it dry, the indwelling spider ran to greet the fly, but finding nothing, sullenly withdrew. October, O hushed October morning mild, thy leaves have ripened to the fall, tomorrow's wind, if it be wild, should waste them all. The crows above the forest call tomorrow they may form and go, O hushed October morning mild, begin the hours of this day slow, make the day seem to us less brief. Hearts not averse to being beguiled. Beguile us in the way you know, release one leaf at break of day, at noon release another leaf, one from our trees, one far away, retard the sun with gentle mist, enchant the land with amethyst. Slow, slow, for the grape's sake, if they were all, whose leaves already are burnt with frost, whose clustered fruit must else be lost, for the grape's sake along the wall. To the thawing wind, come with rain, O loud southwester, bring the singer, bring the nester, give the buried flower a dream, make the settled snowbank steam, find the brown beneath the white. But whate'er you do tonight, bathe my window, make it flow, melt it as the ice will go melt the glass and leave the sticks. Like a hermit's crucifix, burst into my narrow stall, swing the picture on the wall, run the rattling pages o'er, scatter poems on the floor, turn the poet out of door. Romans 7. A time to talk, when a friend calls to me from the road, and slows his horse to a meaning walk. I don't stand still and look around on all the hills I haven't hoed, and shout from where I am, what is it? No, not as there is a time to talk. I thrust my hoe in the mellow ground, blade end up and 5 feet tall. And plod, I go up to the stone wall for a friendly visit, the code. There were three in the meadow by the brook, gathering up windrows, piling cocks of hay, with an eye always lifted toward the west, where an irregular sun-bordered cloud, darkly advanced with a perpetual dagger flickering across its bosom. Suddenly, one helper, thrusting pitchfork in the ground, marched himself off the field and home. One stayed. The town-bred farmer failed to understand. What was there wrong? Something you just now said. What did I say? About our taking pains. To cock the hay? Because it's going to shower, I said that more than half an hour ago. I said it to myself as much as you. You didn't know. But James is one big fool. He thought you meant to find fault with his work. That's what the average farmer would have meant. James would take time, of course, to chew it over before he acted. He's just got round to act. He is a fool if that's the way he takes me. Don't let it bother you. You found out something, the hand that knows his business won't be told, to do work better or faster, those two things. As particular as anyone, most likely I'd have served you just the same. But I know you don't understand our ways, you were just talking what was in your mind, what was in all our minds, and you weren't hinting. Tell you a story of what happened once. I was up here in Salem at a man's, named Sanders, with a gang of four or five, doing the haying. No one liked the boss. He was one of the kind sports call a spider, all wiry arms and legs that spread out wavy, from a humped body nigh as big's a biscuit. But work. That man could work, especially, if by so doing he could get more work out of his hired help. I'm not denying, he was hard on himself. I couldn't find that he kept any hours, not for himself. Daylight and lantern light were one to him. I've heard him pounding in the barn all night, but what he liked was someone to encourage. Them that he couldn't lead, he'd get behind, and drive the way you can, you know, in mowing. Keep at their heels and threaten to mow their legs off. Seen about enough of his bulling tricks. We call that bulling. I'd been watching him, so when he paired off with me in the hayfield, to load the load, thinks I look out for trouble. I built the load and topped it off, old Sanders, combed it down with a rake and says, okay. Everything went well till we reached the barn, with a big jag to empty in a bay. You understand that meant the easy job, for the man up on top of throwing down the hay and rolling it off wholesale, where on a mow it would have been slow lifting. You wouldn't think a fellow'd need much urging. Under those circumstances, would you now? But the old fool seizes his fork in both hands, and looking up bewhiskered out of the pit, shouts like an army captain, let her come, thinks I, d'ye mean it? What was that you said? I asked out loud, so's there'd be no mistake. Did you say, let her come? Yes, let her come. He said it over, but he said it softer. Never you say a thing like that to a man, not if he values what he is. God, I'd as soon murdered him as left out his middle name. I'd built the load and knew right where to find it. Two or three forkfuls I picked lightly round for, like meditating, and then I just dug in and dumped the rackful on him in 10 lots. I looked over the side once in the dust and caught sight of him treading water-like, keeping his head above. Damn ye, I says. That gets ye, he squeaked like a squeezed rat. That was the last I saw or heard of him. I cleaned the rack and drove out to cool off. As I sat mopping hayseed from my neck and sort of waiting to be asked about it, one of the boys sings out, where's the old man? I left him in the barn under the hay. If you want him, you can go and dig him out. They realized from the way I swabbed my neck, more than was needed, something must be up. They headed for the barn. I stayed where I was, they told me afterward. First they forked hay, a lot of it, out into the barn floor. Nothing, they listened for him, not a rustle. I guess they thought I'd spiked him in the temple before I buried him, or I couldn't have managed, they excavated more. Go keep his wife out of the barn. Someone looked in a window, and curse me if he wasn't in the kitchen, slumped way down in a chair with both his feet, stuck in the oven the hottest day that summer. He looked so clean disgusted from behind, there was no one that dared to stir him up. Or let him know that he was being looked at. Apparently I hadn't buried him. I may have knocked him down, but my just trying to bury him had hurt his dignity. He had gone to the house so's not to meet me. He kept away from us all afternoon. We tended to his hay. We saw him out. After a while picking peas in his garden, he couldn't keep away from doing something. Weren't you relieved to find he wasn't dead? No, and yet I don't know, it's hard to say. I went about to kill him fair enough. You took an awkward way, did he discharge you? Discharge me? No, he knew I did just right. 100 collars, Lancaster bore him, such a little town, such a great man. It doesn't see him often, of late years, though he keeps the old homestead, and sends the children down there with their mother to run wild in the summer, a little wild. Sometimes he joins them for a day or two, and sees old friends he somehow can't get near. They meet him in the general store at night, preoccupied with formidable mail. Rifling a printed letter as he talks, they seem afraid. He wouldn't have it so, though a great scholar, he's a Democrat, if not at heart, at least on principle, lately when coming up to Lancaster. His train being late, he missed another train and had 4 hours to wait at Woodsville Junction, after 11 o'clock at night. Too tired to think of sitting such an ordeal out, he turned to the hotel to find a bed. No room, the night clerk said. Unless, Woodsville's a place of shrieks and wandering lamps. And cars that shock and rattle, and one hotel, you say unless. Unless you wouldn't mind sharing a room with someone else. Who is it? A man, so I should hope. What kind of man? I know him, he's all right. A man's a man, separate beds of course you understand. The night clerk blinked his eyes and dared him on. Who's that man sleeping in the office chair? Has he had the refusal of my chance? He was afraid of being robbed or murdered. What do you say? I'll have to have a bed. The night clerk led him up 3 flights of stairs and down a narrow passage full of doors, at the last one of which he knocked and entered. Leif, here's a fellow wants to share your room. show him this way. I'm not afraid of him. I'm not so drunk I can't take care of myself. The night clerk clapped a bedstead on the foot. This will be yours. Good night, he said and went. Leif was the name, I think. Yes, Leif, yet you got it the first time. And yours? Magoon, Dr. Magoon. A doctor. Well, a teacher. Professor, square the circle till you're tired. Hold on, there's something I don't think of now, that I had on my mind to ask the first. Man that knew anything I happened in with, I'll ask you later, don't let me forget it. The doctor looked at Leif and looked away. A man, a brute. Naked above the waist, he sat there creased and shining in the light, fumbling the buttons in a well-starched shirt. I'm moving into a size larger shirt. Felt mean lately, means no name for it. I just found what the matter was tonight. I've been a-choking like a nursery tree when it outgrows the wide band of its name tag. I blamed it on the hot spell we've been having. Twas nothing but my foolish hanging back, not liking to own up I'd grown a size. Number 18 this is. What size do you wear? The doctor caught his throat convulsively. Oh, off 14. 14, you say so? I can remember when I wore 14, and come to think I must have back at home. More than 100 collars, size 14, too bad to waste them all. You ought to have them, they're yours and welcome. Let me send them to you. What makes you stand there on one leg like that? You're not much furtherer than where Kike left you. You act as if you wished you hadn't come. Sit down or lie down, friend. You make me nervous. The doctor made a subdued dash for it and propped himself at bay against a pillow. Not that way, with your shoes on Kike's white bed, you can't rest that way. Let me pull your shoes off. Don't touch me, please, I say, don't touch me. Please, I'll not be put to bed by you, my man. Just as you say, have it your own way then. My man, is it? You talk like a professor, speaking of who's afraid of who, however. I'm thinking I have more to lose than you, if anything should happen to be wrong. Who wants to cut your number 14 throat? Let's have a showdown as an evidence of good faith. There is $90, come if you're not afraid. I am not afraid, there's $5, that's all I carry. I can search you, where are you moving over to? Stay still, you'd better tuck your money under you and sleep on it the way I always do, when I'm with people I don't trust at night. Will you believe me if I put it there, right on the counterpane, that I do trust you? You'd say so, Mr. Man. A collector. My 90 isn't mine, you won't think that, I pick it up a dollar at a time, all round the country for the Weekly News, published in Bow, you know the Weekly News? Known it since I was young. Then you know me, now we are getting on together, talking. Sort of something for it at the front. My business is to find what people want, they pay for it, and so they ought to have it. Fairbanks, he says to me, he's editor. Feel out the public sentiment, he says. A good deal comes on me when all is said. The only trouble is we disagree. In politics, I'm Vermont Democrat. You know what that is, sort of double-dyed? The News has always been Republican. Fairbanks, he says to me, help us this year, meaning buy us their ticket. No, I says, I can't and won't. You've been in long enough, it's time you turned around and boosted us. You'll have to pay me more than 10 a week if I'm expected to elect Bill Taft. I doubt if I could do it anyway. You seem to shape the paper's policy. You see, I'm in with everybody, know 'em all. I almost know their farms as well as they do. You drive around, it must be pleasant work. It's business, but I can't say it's not fun. What I like best's the lay of different farms. Coming out on them from a stretch of woods, or over a hill or round a sudden corner. I like to find folks getting out in spring, raking the dooryard, working near the house. Later they get out further in the fields. Everything's shut sometimes except the barn, the family's all away in some back meadow. There's a hay load a-coming when it comes, and later still they all get driven in. The fields are stripped to lawn, the garden patches, stripped to bare ground, the apple trees to whips and poles. There's nobody about, the chimney, though, keeps up a good brisk smoking, and I lie back and ride. I take the reins, only when someone's coming and the mare stops when she likes. I tell her when to go. I've spoiled Jemima in more ways than one. She's got so she turns in at every house, as if she had some sort of curvature. No matter if I have no errand there, she thinks I'm sociable. I maybe am. It's seldom I get down except for meals, though. Folks entertain me from the kitchen doorstep, all in a family row down to the youngest. One would suppose they might not be as glad to see you as you are to see them. Oh, because I want their dollar. I don't want anything they've not got. I never done. I'm there and they can pay me if they like. I go nowhere on purpose. I happen by, sorry, there is no cup to give you a drink. I drink out of the bottle, not your style. Mayn't I offer you? No, thank you. Just as you say, here's looking at you then. And now I'm leaving you a little while, you'll rest easier when I'm gone, perhaps. Lie down, let yourself go and get some sleep. But first, let's see, what was I going to ask you, those callers? Who shall I address them to? Suppose you aren't awake when I come back. Really, friend, I can't let you. You may need them. Not till I shrink when they'll be out of style. but really I have so many collars. I don't know who I rather would have them. They're only turning yellow where they are, but you're the doctor, as the saying is, I'll put the light out. Don't you wait for me. Just begun the night. You get some sleep. I'll knock so fashion and peep round the door. When I come back, so you'll know who it is, there's nothing I'm afraid of like scared people. I don't want you should shoot me in the head. What am I doing carrying off this bottle? There now, you get some sleep. He shut the door. The doctor slid a little down the pillow. Blueberries. You ought to have seen what I saw on my way to the village through Mortensen's pasture today. Blueberries as big as the end of your thumb, real sky blue and heavy and ready to drum, in the cavernous pail of the first one to come, and all ripe together, not some of them green, and some of them ripe. You ought to have seen. I don't know what part of the pasture you mean. You know where they cut off the woods, let me see. It was 2 years ago or no. Can it be no longer than that? And the following fall, the fire ran and burned it all up but the wall. Why, there hasn't been time for the bushes to grow. That's always the way with the blueberries, though. There may not have been the ghost of a sign of them anywhere under the shade of the pine. But get the pine out of the way, you may burn the pasture all over until not a fern or grass blade is left, not to mention a stick. And presto, they're up all around you as thick and hard to explain as a conjurer's trick. It must be on charcoal they fatten their fruit. I taste in them sometimes the flavor of soot. And after all, really, they're ebony skinned, the blue's but a mist from the breath of the wind, a tarnish that goes at a touch of the hand, and less than the tan with which pickers are tanned. Does Mortensen know what he has, do you think? He may and not care, and so leave the chewink. To gather them for him, you know what he is. He won't make the fact that they're rightfully his an excuse for keeping us other folk out. I wonder you didn't see Lauren about. The best of it was that I did. Do you know, I was just getting through what the field had to show and over the wall and into the road, when who should come by with a Democrat load of all the young chattering Laurens alive, but Lauren the fatherly out for a drive. He saw you then? What did he do? Did he frown? He just kept nodding his head up and down. You know how politely he always goes by. But he thought a big thought, I could tell by his eye, which being expressed might be this in effect. I have left those their berries, I shrewdly suspect, to ripen too long. I am greatly to blame. He's a thriftier person than some I could name. He seems to be thrifty, and hasn't he need, with the mouths of all those young Laurens to feed, he has brought them all up on wild berries, they say, like birds. They store a great many away. They eat them the year round, and those they don't eat, they sell in the store and buy shoes for their feet. Who cares what they say? It's a nice way to live, just taking what nature is willing to give, not forcing her hand with harrow and plow. I wish you had seen his perpetual bow, and the air of the youngsters. Not one of them turned, and they looked so solemn, absurdly concerned. I wish I knew half what the flock of them know, of where all the berries and other things grow. Cranberries in bogs and raspberries on top of the boulder-strewn mountain, and when they will crop. I met them one day, and each had a flower, stuck into his berries as fresh as a shower, some strange kind. They told me it hadn't a name. I've told you how once, not long after we came, I almost provoked poor Lauren to mirth by going to him of all people on earth to ask if he knew any fruit to be had for the picking. The rascal, he said he'd be glad to tell if he knew. But the year had been bad, there had been some berries, but those were all gone. He didn't say where they had been. He went on, I'm sure, as polite as could be. He spoke to his wife in the door, let me see, Marn, we don't know any good burying place. It was all he could do to keep a straight face. If he thinks all the fruit that grows wild is for him, he'll find he's mistaken. See here, for a whim, we'll pick in the Mortensen's pasture this year. We'll go in the morning, that is, if it's clear, and the sun shines out warm. The vines must be wet. It's so long since I picked, I almost forget how we used to pick berries. We took one look round, then sank out of sight like trolls underground, and saw nothing more of each other or heard, unless when you said I was keeping a bird away from its nest, and I said it was you. Well, one of us is. For complaining, it flew around and around us. And then for a while, we picked till I feared you had wandered a mile, and I thought I had lost you. I lifted a shout, too loud for the distance you were, it turned out, for when you made answer, your voice was as low as talking, you stood up beside me, you know. We shan't have the place to ourselves to enjoy. Not likely, when all the young Laurens deploy, they'll be there tomorrow or even tonight. They won't be too friendly, they may be polite, to people they look on as having no right to pick where they're picking. But we won't complain. You ought to have seen how it looked in the rain, the fruit mixed with water in layers of leaves, like two kinds of jewels, a vision for thieves. Brown's descent O.R., the willy-nilly slide. Brown lived at such a lofty farm that everyone for miles could see his lantern when he did his chores, in winter after 3:30, and many must have seen him make his wild descent from there one night, cross lots, cross walls, cross everything, describing rings of lantern light. Between the house and barn, the gale got him by something he had on and blew him out on the icy crust. That cased the world and he was gone. Walls were all buried, trees were few. He saw no stay unless he stove. A hole in somewhere with his heel. But though repeatedly he strove and stamped and said things to himself, and sometimes something seemed to yield, he gained no foothold but pursued his journey down from field to field. Sometimes he came with arms outspread, like wings revolving in the scene upon his longer axis, and with no small dignity of mien, faster or slower as he chanced, sitting or standing as he chose, according as he feared to risk his neck or thought to spare his clothes. He never let the lantern drop, and some exclaimed who saw afar the figures he described with it. I wonder what those signals are Brown makes at such an hour of night. He's celebrating something strange. I wonder if he's sold his farm or been made master of the Grange. He reeled, he lurched, he bobbed, he checked, he fell and made the lantern rattle, but saved the light from going out. So halfway down he fought the battle, incredulous of his own bad luck, and then becoming reconciled to everything, he gave it up and came down like a coasting child. Well, I be. That was all he said, as standing in the river road, he looked back up the slippery slope. 2 miles it was to his abode. Sometimes, as an authority on motor cars, I'm asked if I should say our stock was petered out. And this is my sincere reply. Yankees are what they always were. Don't think Brown ever gave up hope of getting home again because he couldn't climb that slippery slope or even thought of standing there until the January thaw should take the polish off the crust. He bowed with grace to natural law and then went round it on his feet. After the manner of our stock, not much concerned for those to whom, at that particular time o'clock, it must have looked as if the course he steered was really straight away from that which he was headed for. Not much concerned for them, I say. But now he snapped his eyes 3 times, then shook his lantern, saying, "Isles, bout out," and took the long way home by road, a matter of several miles, Roman 8, Revelation. We make ourselves a place apart, behind light words that tease and flout. But oh, the agitated heart, till someone really find us out, a pity if the case require. Or so we say that in the end, we speak the literal to inspire the understanding of a friend, but so withal from babes that play at hide-and-seek to God afar, so all who hide too well away must speak and tell us where they are, storm fear, when the wind works against us in the dark and pelts with snow, the lower chamber window on the east, and whispers with a sort of stifled bark, "The beast, come out." Come out, it costs no inward struggle not to go. Ah, do I count our strength? 2 and a child, those of us not asleep subdued to mark how the cold creeps as the fire dies at length, how drifts are piled, dooryard and road ungrated, till even the comforting barn grows far away, and my heart owns a doubt, whether tease in us to arise with day and save ourselves unaided, bond and free. Love has earth to which she clings, with hills and circling arms about, wall within wall to shut fear out. But thought has need of no such things, for thought has a pair of dauntless wings. On snow and sand and turf, I see where love has left a printed trace, with straining in the world's embrace, and such is love and glad to be. But thought has shaken his ankles free. Thought cleaves the interstellar gloom and sits in serious disk all night, till day makes him retrace his flight, with smell of burning on every plume, back past the sun to an earthly room. His gains in heaven are what they are. Yet some say love by being thrall and simply staying possesses all. In several beauty that thought fares far, to find fused in another star, flower gathering, I left you in the morning, and in the morning glow, you walked away beside me, to make me sad to go. Do you know me in the gloaming, gaunt and dusty gray with roaming? Are you dumb because you know me not, or dumb because you know all for me? And not a question, for the faded flowers gay, that could take me from beside you for the ages of a day. They are yours and be the measure of their worth for you to treasure, the measure of the little while. That I've been long away, reluctance, out through the fields and the woods, and over the walls I have wended, I have climbed the hills of view and looked at the world and descended, I have come by the highway home, and lo, it is ended. The leaves are all dead on the ground, save those that the oak is keeping, to ravel them one by one, and let them go scraping and creeping, out over the crusted snow, when others are sleeping. And the dead leaves lie huddled and still, no longer blown hither and thither, the last lone aster is gone, the flowers of the witch hazel wither, the heart is still aching to seek, but the feet question whither. Ah, when to the heart of man, was it ever less than a treason, to go with the drift of things, to yield with a grace to reason, and bow and accept the end, of a love or a season into my own? One of my wishes is that those dark trees, so old and firm they scarcely show the breeze, were not as twere the merest mask of gloom, but stretched away unto the edge of doom. I should not be withheld, but that some day, into their vastness I should steal away, fearless of ever finding open land, or highway where the slow wheel pours the sand. I do not see why I should e'er turn back, or those should not set forth upon my track, to overtake me, who should miss me here, and long to know if still I held them dear. They would not find me changed from him they knew, only more sure of all I thought was true. End of the project. GUTMBRGEBOOKSELECTDPOEMS*. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM, concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1e. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1e1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1e2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as but not limited to incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty, disclaimer of DAMAGES, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, b alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and c any defect you cause, section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or Federal Tax Identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair, NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up to date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at 3ords.com.